Stone & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5, the game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda Gentry, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios tonight at First Horizon Park. Sounds and Louisville Bats. First pitch is 6:35. That's right. So the plenty of great seats available. They're taking batting practice out here right now, so they're ready to rock and roll. So I was listening to SiriusXM NFL Radio, which for some random reason has all of a sudden become like the 24/7 Ryan Tannehill channel. Which
I don't know if it's a random reason.
Well, why do you think it is? Because they drafted Malik Willis?
I think it's because, well, Tannehill did it to himself. I think Tannehill said something that was controversial in the eyes of the national media, and the people love that, especially coming from a quarterback.
I guess. I mean, like, Stephen Jones is doing the media round, so they could be talking Cowboys about all the things Stephen Jones says.
But what interesting is going on with the Cowboys right
now? It's the Cowboys! Oh,
but what interesting thing are you going to talk about?
How many SiriusXM subscriptions are sold for NFL radio?
I don't know.
And if you had to say, okay, what is the most popular team of those people? It'd have to be Cowboys.
Yes.
But then again, if you want to listen...
But what is Dak saying about his
eventual... I will say this. If you do want to listen to a channel that literally talks nothing but the NFL, then you probably like the whole NFL. You know, like there is probably that.
Yeah.
So Doug Whaley, the former general manager of the Buffalo Bills, hosts a show. And he was asked by Solomon Wilcots about how much pressure is on Ryan Tannehill. And when I heard this, and this is a former general manager in the league, it set me through the roof. Here's what Doug Whaley said.
How much pressure is on Ryan Tannehill this season?
Well, I'll say this. No matter what you say, that offense still is running through Derrick Henry. So
there you go.
The pressure is on Tannehill, to me, it's don't make the fatal mistake. Do not throw the pick or the picks like he did in that playoff game. The offense isn't going to be on your shoulders. It's on Derrick Henry's shoulder. We just need you to, and I hate to say it, and people will say it, think it's a bad thing, but to manage the game.
I hate that. I mean, I honestly hate that.
Why?
Because we need to stop babying these players. And Ryan Tannehill, that's what that is, right? Like, hey, Ryan, you just need to not lose the game. Guess
Isn't
what?
Isn't that what we've been asking him this entire time?
That's,
don't lose the game.
How many chances do you get? You know what I mean? Like, I am a everything is earned kind of guy. Like,
well,
I
just got another one.
I am a you got to earn it. And Tannehill went out there, and he did not lose them the game in the 2019 season in the playoffs against New England and against Baltimore and in Kansas City where they lost. He didn't lose them that game. Tannehill played fine, and you won a lot of games. And the next year, Tannehill lost you the game against the Ravens. And then he lost you the game by, you know, without there to be any question of whether or not he lost them the game against Cincinnati. In fact, and see, this is the other thing, is I'm so tired of trying to preach the same thing and expect different results. That's why I get mad about John Hines, because all these people tell me that John Hines is this great coach. He's never won anything. So I have to just keep waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting until he finally wins something, and then you could say, see? See? And it's like with Tannehill, it's like I just got to keep waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting until he doesn't ruin the game. This was our show on January 3rd of last year after the Titans beat the Dolphins. And this is why I'm not, you know, this idea of putting my arm around Tannehill and saying, hey, man, just don't lose him the game. I'm over this, because this is what we said on January 3rd of this year going into the last week of the season and the playoffs. Against the Buffalo Bills, if I can get one of those from Tannehill, against Joe Burrow, if I can get one of those from Tannehill, then you have to hope that the defense can hold. By the way, second half, punt. They started at the Titan 42. They scored a touchdown. Game's over. So they only had to march it down the whole field one time. But what was the key? Tannehill didn't turn the ball over. What was the key against San Francisco? Tannehill didn't turn the ball over. Jimmy G turned the ball over. If Ryan Tannehill and the offense can just not turn the ball over, this team's got a really good shot of going to the Super Bowl. Playing at home matters. Just ask Cincinnati. All I said was just don't turn the ball over. And this team will go to the Super Bowl.
So why are you mad about them saying don't lose the game?
Because
isn't that kind of the same thing?
Because I'm not babying him anymore. Because the pressure is much...
You know when have we ever babied him?
You know what the pressure is now? The pressure is not to not lose the game. The pressure is you need to go save your career. Because if you go out there this year and you have the same season you have last year, or you have the same playoffs that you had last year, your career is over. The idea, I mean, if you want to be a backup, you can be a backup, but I don't know too many people that have made $150 million and want to be a backup. So, I mean, this is your career. And I think that's a lot more pressure than putting your arm around somebody and saying, I just hope you just don't lose us the game, buddy. Like, it'll be okay.
So you don't like the tone, not necessarily the message.
I don't like the attitude. I mean, I think the attitude is, dude, your career is on the line. Like, this team has just gone out and essentially drafted your replacement. And I think you should know this. Like, that your team has drafted your replacement. That your team right now doesn't know if you can win them a Super Bowl. That nobody here wants to commit one dime more to you. And you have to go out there and prove it. And here's the other thing that bothers me, too, about the just don't lose us the game, buddy. These are the NFL playoffs. At some point, you're going to have to throw the football now.
I think you're being too critical.
At some point.
I mean, my message is the exact same.
No.
Don't lose the game.
At some point.
That's what we've been preaching for the past 5 months. Lose the game.
No, we preached it leading into the Bengals game, and then he went and threw an interception on the first play. And then threw an interception on the last play. And then threw an interception somewhere there in the middle. And I would say this. At some point, he is going to have to win them a game. Like, I hate to break it to you. This is what the $38 million is for against the cap, the $30 million period.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, it's going to be third down and 19, and you're going to have to get a first down. I mean, I go back to that Ravens game. They held Derrick Henry to 60 yards, but somehow that horrible defense in 2020 kept that game close enough that the Titans got the ball with a chance to tie it, and I know the receivers were hurt, and Davis was out, and... You can't miss a wide-open Cam Batson in the middle of the field. You can't miss a wide-open A.J. Brown at the top of the field when you throw it to, what's the guy's name who sucks who's in Detroit now? Khalif Raymond. When you try to throw the ball to Khalif Raymond and it gets intercepted. And to me, the whole patty cake thing, that's over. Like the whole arm around the shoulder, the whole, you know, you don't have to, no, you got to win. You got to go out there for this team, and you got to start winning some ball games now. Like, you are going to have to, because it's not going to get easier. AJ's gone. Who knows if Derrick Henry's ever going to be the same off that foot? And the expectation is to win. And so when I hear this, like, and this goes back to my theory about Doug Whaley doesn't care about the Titans. The national media doesn't care about the Titans. So if the Titans get into the playoffs and they lose in the first round, and, you know, Tannehill just goes out there and plays average, but doesn't lose them the game where it's all his fault on national TV like the Bengals game was, then everybody will say, I mean, what do you expect from Tannehill? And I'm like, I expect Tannehill to go put my team in the position to win the game against Joe Burrow or Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, because that's what he's paid to do. And he's got to make up for what happened last year. Last year was... just don't lose the game and let the chips fall where they lie. If they had played that Bengals game and Tannehill had not thrown interceptions, so let's say instead of the first interception, Brett Kern shanks a punt. And so Cincinnati gets 3 points. And then the second interception, they hand the ball to Deontay Foreman after he had the big run, and Deontay Foreman fumbles the ball, like the New England game.
Mm-hmm.
Deontay Foreman fumbles the ball, and the Bengals recover. And instead of the last one, you know, instead of that third down interception that Tannehill threw, the Titans punt it down to the Bengals, and the Bengals go 4 plays down the field, kick a field goal, and win. If that had happened, we would not have be complaining about Tannehill, and Malik Willis probably would not be on this team. But it did happen, and so now everybody here doubts you. So now you have to prove it to everybody else that you belong to play here. Not, hey, just earn your $30 million salary by not turning a ball over. That is not my expectation. Because you're going to have to do more than that in week two when you go to Buffalo. You want to beat the Giants week one? Don't turn the ball over. But you're going to Buffalo week two, quarterback's going to have to do a little bit more. He's not going to have AJ to do it for him. And so, to me, I think that, you know, there's two ways to address this. There's the sugarcoat way. There's the kiss-ass way, the way we did it last year, which was just don't turn the ball over. And then there's the real way, which is, dude, your career is on the line. Because even if it's not this guy, it'll be somebody else next year. They will get another quarterback if this guy doesn't pick it up. And I think there needs to be a little picking it up talk that goes on around there. No entitlement. Remember? That's what the coach said. So that Doug Whaley thing, boy, it got me just spun up. I mean, just don't turn the ball over, Tannehill. No. You need to pay what you owe. And right now it's
But
that,
I think my thing is, I don't know if I necessarily trust him to do that. And that's a problem. And that's not anything new. That's something that has stemmed from this past season as well. But you say quarterback needs to be able to win them games. It's 3rd and 19. You need a first down. You need to be able to get them a first down if you're going to be a $30 million quarterback. I don't know if Tannehill can do that.
Then he can't be here. And then
you lose.
And then his career is over. I mean, this is the make or break year for Ryan Tannehill's career. Because he will never be a starter again if he doesn't make it this year. Like what happened to Marcus, where Marcus had to go sit on the bench for 2 years, but he got another shot because of a weird happenstance kind of thing. That will not happen to Tannehill because he's too old. So, like, this is your career. Tannehill's not doing what he did to get out of Miami, where he took a $10 million pay cut and decided to go be a backup. He's not doing that. Like, this is it for him. And so that should be the message of, I don't know how much you love football. I think you love football. I don't know. But this is your career. This is it. 615-737-1025. And I think that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot more pressure than,
hey,
just don't turn the ball over. But it's time. It should be.
But don't turn the ball
over. It should be pressure time.
That's part of it. Don't turn the ball over.
Yes.
No matter how you want to say it, if you want to sugarcoat it or if you want to be harsh about it, don't turn the ball over.
So Ryan Tannehill, I asked Ryan Tannehill a really direct question that did not make headlines. That I asked it because I honestly wanted to know what he thought about it and I wanted to talk about it. And we just didn't do it because the other question blew up so bad. And then the playoffs started. And so we had all that at one time. But I want to get to this coming up next. 615-737-1025. And it's a question that everybody thinks they know the answer to, but nobody actually has the answer to. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company right here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I love my friends at Hiller. They take great care of my home, and I promise you that they can do the exact same for you. Hiller has been taking care of my home for years. That's right. And they're proud supporters of all of our local teams like the Nashville Predators, the Tennessee Volunteers, and the Vanderbilt Commodores. And I absolutely love it because when you work with somebody like Hiller, they will do a fantastic job. I know this again because I have been doing this for forever with my friends at Hiller. So the one thing that I'll tell you is that now is the perfect time of year to call and get that HVAC system taken care of, because what will happen is at this time of the year, it starts to get hot and all of a sudden your AC goes out and you don't want that. So what do you do? I think the key is to call Hiller today to keep that from happening and put off the payments until later. Call my friends at Hiller in order to figure out how to do that. HappyHiller.com is the email address. That's Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. My guys, call the Happy Face Truck today. There you go. That was Tannehill on the Bengals game, which I actually appreciated him saying, even though some people didn't, which I don't, you know, whatever. I appreciated Tannehill, like, basically taking ownership for the Bengals game. But the bigger question with Tannehill is, why was his season last year so bad compared to the seasons before? Because 19, he looked like a dude, and albeit not in the playoffs, but we made excuses, and I was chief among those. And then 2020, his season was great, but his playoffs weren't very good, and I didn't make a lot of excuses for the playoffs, but his season was really good, and last year was terrible. So I asked Tannehill about that, and this is what Tannehill said.
Was your 21 season not as good as your 20 or 19 season?
I think a lot of good and a lot of bad, and a lot of things went into it. You know, it wasn't one thing or another. You know, we broke down all the turnovers and what led to those, and it wasn't, you know, any one specific area that they really jumped up. You know, it was just, you know, a little bit here, a little bit here. Then you add the sum and you get the, you know, the big growth. So just taking a step back and reevaluating those things and, you know, seeing where I can improve upon going forward.
You know what I think that answer was?
What?
Not my fault. Because it's like it wasn't really one area. You know, we looked back at all the turnovers and we looked at what it was and some here and some there and some here and some pass protection, some here with the receivers not getting open, some here with the ball hitting Chester Rogers in the shoulder and popping up in the air, some here. Now, this one I made a bad mistake on throwing that interception, but, you know, I think it was that. That's just my interpretation of what he said there, which I hear you. Because there were a lot of excuses to be made, and trust me, I know he doesn't listen to this stuff, but the excuses were made for him during the course of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Especially by our morning show.
Offensive line, pass catchers, didn't have the chemistry with Julio.
Derrick Henry got hurt.
Derrick Henry got hurt.
So there
AJ
were
AJ was hurt.
There was a lot of excuse making to go around, and it did happen. But I don't know if we will see this year if he's right or wrong.
But also, do we want to buy it?
I mean,
because is Ryan Tannehill going to say, yeah, you know what? Actually, that offensive line was just atrocious, and I was always seeing ghosts, and I never felt comfortable in the pocket.
So
I say that.
I'm gonna put it to you like this. For whatever reason, you didn't have a great semester.
Uh-huh.
And then you throw three interceptions on the final exam? F.
Yeah, I mean, yes, the final game of the season was very much so. Him.
I could make the argument during the season that it wasn't his fault, but I'm not making the argument for the finale, so I'm lumping it all together.
But and that's also the one thing that has remained the same is, you know, we could make excuses in the regular season, but 19, 20, and 21.
Playoff
games,
enough.
He just poops the bed.
Yeah, I mean, in 20 and 19, he did a good job of not... I mean, even then, you could argue the interception he threw against the Patriots was exactly like some of the mistakes that he's made, you know, some of the boneheaded stuff that he's done in the other playoff games. And it just didn't bite them because Julian Edelman dropped the ball. So you can make that case, but, you know, that's one of those if this didn't happen. But he did throw he did throw the interception. It was a horrible interception intended for Davis, where he panicked and just threw the ball up in the air, and I forget who intercepted it. Maybe it was J.C. Jackson. I can't remember. But the Patriots intercepted it, and I was like, oh, God. I was like, yep, that dumb decision right there. Let's go to your phones. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What do we have? Thank you for the text line, which is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
One texter texts in and says, how short of a leash should Tannehill have before the Titans think about putting Malik Willis in?
So I don't think that Tannehill will be threatened by Malik Willis this year. I think the Titans will carry three quarterbacks. Now, this is just a hypothesis without having seen a single practice of the three together or without Malik Willis having ever practiced against real NFL players. I believe the plan is right now, Tannehill starts, Logan backs up, Malik's the third guy. And Bill Polian made a case for him, you know, having packages designed for Willis. I get that. But I think my thing is that I don't care about the if you activate all three quarterbacks, that's one guy on special teams or one backup offensive lineman, and then you get in a situation, and then who's going to be your gunner, and then what do you do?
You could make that argument for any position group.
All I know is the Titans went into games in 2020 with three outside linebackers active on game day. If you can go in there with three outside linebackers active on game day, you can go in there with one less gunner on your roster, or you can ask Nick Westbrook-Ikhina to do more, and it'll be fine. That's my theory, but I think Logan's the backup. I think Tannehill is the starting quarterback this year, and if he loses the job in the middle of the season, it will be because you suck. And at that point, then the question will be, is Malik the guy or is somebody else the guy? What else we got?
One texture checks in also. Not happy with you. Says you talk every day about the Titans, but you know nothing about them. They're run-first team. All Tannehill has to do is hand the ball off and throw less than 25 passes a game.
You're right. I know nothing about the Titans. I don't remember the fact that in the game where they tried to hand the ball off to the Ravens, they ultimately needed Tannehill to throw it. I guess I don't remember being at the AFC Championship game 2 years ago. Well, I guess technically 3 years ago at the AFC Championship game where the Titans got the ball before the half up And I want to say there was 2 minutes to go in the half, 3 minutes to go in the half, and everybody knew what the Titans were going to try to do. They were going to try to run the football and run out the clock and not give the ball back to Mahomes. Or run the football, get in position to take a shot, you know, and try to get some points before halftime. But they were treading water at that point. I think the score at that point was 17-14. And the Titans ended up going three and out because they tried to run the ball and it didn't work, because in the NFL, they ultimately can stop the run if they want to by bringing somebody else down in the box. They can always bring one more than you can block. That's what Kansas City did. And you need Tannehill, once Mahomes makes that run for that touchdown before the half, you need Tannehill to get you back in that game. And he never did. The Titans forced a three and out to begin the second half, or it wasn't a three and out, but they forced a punt to begin the second half with Kansas City down, I believe, at that point, 21-17. That's when you need Tannehill to make a play. And I know Kansas City was good, and Buffalo's going to be good, and Cincinnati's good, and the Ravens might be good, and the Colts might be good, and who else might be good in the AFC this year? Denver might be good, and they all might be good.
Vegas
yes,
might be good.
But if you're going to beat somebody, you got to make the plays. You can't have the plays made for you. It'll work a couple of times, but it won't work every time. And ultimately, if you're going to beat these teams to go win the Super Bowl, either everything's going to go your exact way, or you're going to have to win them a game. Everybody always looks at Peyton Manning's first championship, and it's like, well, he beat Rex Grossman. And I get that. Like, that was not a hard Super Bowl for Indianapolis to win. He came back from down 21 points against Tom Brady's Patriots the week before. That's winning your way into the Super Bowl. Like, that is the moment. It didn't matter who. It's like when the Red Sox overcame a 3-0 hole against the Yankees. It didn't matter who they played after that. They were going to win the series no matter what. It's the Red Sox. They overcame a 3-0 hole from the Yankees. At that point, the season doesn't matter. It's over. Like, they broke the curse, and you knew they were going to win the World Series. Manning overcomes a 21-point deficit against Brady. You know, give him a layup because he earned it. And Tannehill is going to have to earn something. It's not going to have to be that, but he's going to have to earn something for this team to win the Super Bowl. I totally believe it. Just like Jimmy Garoppolo. If Jimmy Garoppolo hits Emmanuel Sanders for a wide open touchdown in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, Kansas City loses, San Francisco wins, Jimmy's the MVP, and Trey Lance is not on that roster.
It can make the same argument at the NFC Championship.
What about the guy
with
that dropped
San Francisco, yeah.
Well, but that guy just dropped it. But I'm talking about for quarterbacks. Like, this affects Jimmy's entire career.
Yeah.
Because he missed one throw. But you got to make the throw. You got to make that. Emmanuel Sanders is wide open, and the Super Bowl is right there. And for everything, you got to make the throw. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Trevor Maddich will join us next. I want to know what Trevor thinks about Treylon Burks and what happened at minicamp. Plus, we'll get his thoughts on Vrabel's comments about Malik Willis and Tannehill today. So we'll get to that coming up next. Stillman and Company right here, live from First Horizon Park. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman and Company, we're live at First Horizon Park, where the Nashville Sounds take on the Louisville Bats tonight. First pitch, 6:35. And a lot was made about Treylon Burks' weekend. Now, he did sign his rookie contract today, and so I see the email like, Titans agree to terms with Treylon Burks. And I'm like, yeah, there's really nothing to talk about there. You already know what he's going to make ahead of time. You know that he's going to sign him. It's not like the old days where guys used to hold out and there were, you know, like serious negotiations over rookie contracts and stuff like that. But a weird weekend for Treylon Burks. So he practices in the rookie minicamp on Friday, does not make it through, goes back inside, comes back out for two more reps. The local media said there was an inhaler involved, and there were a lot of people hypothesizing about the heat and other things. Vrabel asked about it, said, oh, we just do whatever the trainer says, and didn't really get into it much except use his soapbox to talk about how players need to be working out at the team facility and not with their trainers. And everybody's got their own opinion about it, but then he did finish, go through the whole practice on Saturday with no problem. Trevor Maddich joins us now, ESPN college football analyst, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trev, your thoughts, you played in the NFL, you've done rookie mini camps, you live here. What are your thoughts on Treylon Burks not being able to get through his first day of rookie mini camp, and what would your concern level be about Burks?
I'm disgusted. Flat out disgusted.
Wow.
Now, assuming that we don't learn you know, that he inhaled a golf ball when he was a kid and it's still lodged in his lung and it gets him trouble, you know, or he was sick or something like that. And there's no indication of that right now. If he just came in out of shape, then that's just beyond pathetic. It's beyond pathetic. It hurts the team on the field because they need him to be able to practice well and hard with efficiency and mental focus without being unduly fatigued over the course of this rookie minicamp to get him ready for the next step in his development. And if he's not in shape, then he can't do that. But from a standpoint of, you know, so that hurts the team. It's a temporary thing. Not that big of a deal. The reason I'm disgusted is that coming in as a first-round draft choice, he needs to know that everybody's going to be watching him. Everyone's going to be judging him, evaluating him. The spotlights are on him, and he better be ready to be his best self in the moment. And I hear people make excuses that nobody's really ready for rookie minicamp because it's the NFL and the physical demands are greater. And all those things are true. But there wasn't a single other rookie that I'm aware of that fell out of that practice, especially not 20 minutes into the practice. Only one did, and that was the first-round draft choice, Treylon Burks. And so if there's no reason underlying that, and he just wasn't ready for the moment. Well, let's put it this way. He was the least ready for the moment of all the other rookies who showed up. That's just incredibly disgusting.
How much would you worry about the fact that, I mean, like Malik Willis doesn't have to play week one. And Roger McCreary, they've got other corners. They traded A.J. Brown. And they need Treylon Burks to be ready week one against the Giants. How worried would that first day of minicamp make you feel about the Giants game, even though it's months away?
You know what's crazy, Jared, is actually it makes me feel better. Because this happening now, I think, should sting him. If it doesn't sting him, then the Titans made a bad character draft choice. But if he's got football character, and by all indications he does, this should sting him because of conversations that we're having now, that people all over this fan base are having about him and about that moment. And I don't think there's any chance that he's going to not be ready, fully ready, for the start of training camp and be in the very best shape of his life and be in the best shape of everybody in that wide receiver room. And they have, every team has, a conditioning test at the beginning of training camp. It varies by team, but it might be 14 110-yard dashes for time with a very limited amount of rest in between, that kind of a thing. And the last one has to be within a certain number of seconds from the first one. Right, but they've all got to be, depending on position group, faster than a certain amount, so you can't sandbag it. Those conditioning tests are designed so that you cannot tough it out. If you're not ready for it, you can't just be just a tough physical guy and you're just going to make it happen anyway. Those are designed that if you didn't do the work, you will fall out. And so I think he will know that, and he'll be focused on that, and he will not want to have this happen to him then. So when you talk about the opener, Jared, I think this actually is better because I think he's going to come into that training camp in superior condition. If he doesn't, then we have another conversation.
Do you worry about Burks? Because at 225, I read a Bruce Feldman article before the draft in which he talked to a wide receivers coach who said, you know, I think the quote was that he's two biscuits short of being a flexed out tight end. He's 225. He ran a 4.55 at the combine, which a lot of people were underwhelmed by. They expected him to run faster at the combine. Do you worry about his shape at all?
I don't worry about that at all, no. You talk about the speed, 4.55. If he gets it all onto the field, that's fast enough. Jerry Rice, I think, timed out at 4.6, which is one of the reasons that over, you know, about half the league passed on him. He was taken 16th. By the 49ers in the 1985 draft, and people thought he was too slow. But you rarely saw Jerry Rice get caught from behind because he got all of that speed onto the field. And when you watch tape on Burks at Arkansas, he didn't seem to get caught from behind. He didn't appear slow. He appeared to be plenty fast enough to make big plays down the field. So I don't worry about that speed. Also because, you know, if he was 180, it'd be different. But at 225, he also is much more physical than the smaller guys that would be faster than him, but he's faster than a lot of, if not most, of the bigger guys that can match his physicality. And the fact that he might be two biscuits short of playing a flex tight end is actually good because of the options it gives for physical mismatches that you can scheme up with formation and motion. So I don't worry about that. But being 225, you know, the there was no lineman that fell out of that first practice. Not one. They're a lot bigger than 225. Only one guy fell out. That's what worries me.
Mm-hmm. Trevor Maddox is our guest, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Mike Vrabel was appearing on Sirius XM NFL Radio this morning and was asked about the Tannehill and Willis fallout from the comments. Here's what Vrabel said this morning, Trevor.
You went and drafted a very highly touted quarterback, Malik Willis, that people, I thought that was a great pick in the third round. How do you think, you know, after I saw you supported what Tannehill had to say, and I understand that, but how do you think that, you know, how do you think that that's going to work? Do you think that, that Ryan really will end up being somewhat of a mentor for Malik?
All I can tell you is what I saw yesterday when they were both on the field together. And it looked like a team with three quarterbacks that are all supporting each other and two veteran guys that have been here that understand the drills that are helping the younger player. And that's all I can go by is what I saw yesterday. And I would say that was extremely positive.
Trevor, what do you make of that?
That's what he had to say. I think that of all NFL head coaches, Mike Vrabel would be critical, then not political, if he really wanted to be. So I kind of take him at his word on that. And I really think that that's probably the way it's going to go about being. I mean, it's not like Brett Favre kind of shunning Aaron Rodgers when he was drafted to take Favre's place. And then Rodgers turning around and kind of shunning Jordan Love. I mean, he wasn't mean to him, but he didn't help him at all. I don't think we're going to have this kind of a situation. I think that in part because I'm sure Tannehill was stung about the way his comment was taken, he's going to make sure that he goes out of his way to be friendly towards Willis. And that's good because the team, let's put it this way, if I'm on that team, if I'm in that locker room, I don't expect Ryan Tannehill to spend hours every day after practicing and meetings trying to coach that guy up. That's not his job. That's the quarterback coach's job, right? But I do expect him to be positive and help the kid along, because if something happens to Tannehill, I, as a member of that team, still need to win a football game. And then another until Tannehill gets back. And that means I need the backup quarterback to be as capable as possible. Now, it's not the starting quarterback's job to get the backup ready, but the starting quarterback can do small things to help the backup learn how to be a pro, learn how to prepare, learn how to watch. People think that, you know, they hear the term learn how to watch film. They think, well, what are you talking about? You just watch what's up there. No, you're looking for specific things at specific times in specific situations that can eventually give you one edge on one play in a specific scenario and a specific down and distance. And you're looking for those things. Those are the kinds of things that Tannehill can kind of help with, just a word here and a word there with Malik Willis. And so I think that Tannehill, probably being stung by the way his words were taken when he said it's not his job to mentor Malik Willis, I think he will go out of his way to make sure that the appearance in public at least is that they're getting along well. And he also needs to give that same appearance to his teammates, because if they think that he is being selfish, that he is trying to keep the kid down because he's in a fit of pique and a fit of, you know, disrespect because they drafted him in the third round, whatever it is, if the team looks at him and sees that, they're not going to respect him as much, and it hurts the team. So I think that Tannehill's smart enough to understand those things, and I think that at least the appearances will be correct.
Trevor Maddox is with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, where experience matters. There is, Trev, I got to get to this, there is something Vrabel keeps harping on that it seems like he's mad at somebody. I want to get your thoughts on that. I also want to get your thoughts on Malik Willis after rookie minicamp and what your expectations for him are. And there's a college coach they just announced who was making way too much money. We'll get to that next with Trevor Stillman and Company, live from First Horizon Park. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman and Company, we are live at First Horizon Park. Trevor Maddox is with us, ESPN analyst, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trev, Caroline and I picked up on something very interesting from Mike Vrabel. One, on Friday, he talked about how guys, you know, think they can train with their trainer, but nothing equals what they can do at the facility. Today on Sirius XM, he talked about how He's getting entitlement out of the organization, and then talked about how this is his favorite time of the year because he's coaching the guys who want to be here. We think Vrabel might be mad at somebody. We know that there was a big hubbub made about Tannehill missing the beginning of voluntary workouts. Trev, do you think Mike Vrabel's upset at his team right now?
Well, I think anytime you have your starting quarterback that doesn't show up at the beginning of voluntary workouts, it's going to make you mad, especially a guy like Vrabel who's not that far away from his own playing career. And I think he sees players not just as a coach, but as he would as a player in the locker room. That's why Treylon Burks falling out in the first 20 minutes of the first practice of rookie camp is a problem, because the teammates will look at that and wonder if they can count on him. And he'll have to dig out of that hole. So Tannehill, who doesn't really need to be there at the beginning of voluntary workouts from the standpoint of his play on the field, needs to be there to show the team that he's there with them and that everybody's the same and that nobody's better than anybody else and the commitment is equal. And when I heard Mike Vrabel's words, it sounded like he was talking exactly like Tannehill. And there might be some other people that he's thrown into that bucket. But when he said specifically that when they've got players that don't show up for a few weeks at the beginning of voluntary workouts, and when they get here, it's just not the same. My impression was he's saying that Ryan Tannehill just isn't the same as he would have been had he been there from the beginning. Now, I don't know that that's exactly fair. I think he's probably engaging in some hyperbole to make sure that the message gets across. But the message to me is any player, rookie or veteran, who misses any voluntary or voluntary workouts is going to be in his doghouse, and they should just get ready for it. So I think the whole team has been served notice.
You know what I think it is, Trevor? I think it's Derrick Henry. We were talking about this earlier today. Derrick Henry, when did we find out that he was in Dallas?
In the 2 o'clock hour, but he was in Dallas yesterday.
Okay, so Derrick Henry was in Dallas yesterday. Derrick Henry, you know, last year the offseason program, the voluntary stuff was canceled. The year before that, there was no offseason program because of COVID. Derrick Henry's trained with his trainer the last 2 years, and the results have been outstanding. But now things are back to normal. I think Derek probably looks at it as, this is how I've trained, so I'm going to keep training this way. And I think Vrabel looks at it as, Derek Henry is Derek Henry, and the young players will try to emulate whatever Derek Henry does. I think it's Derek Henry, Trevor. I can understand both sides of it. I can understand why Derek Henry would say, why would I change what I'm doing? And I can understand why Vrabel would feel the need that Derrick Henry has to set the example for the entire team, because he's Derrick Henry. What do you think?
Yeah, I can see both of them. And truthfully, coaches will treat different players differently based on who they are and what their strengths and weaknesses are. The quarterback needs to be there. The running back, even though he's the leader of the team and all that, since he's been working out successfully on his own, doing what he's been doing in years past, then showing up ready to go, the running back, not the quarterback, it's a little bit different from a standpoint of the dynamic in the locker room. At the same time, if it is Derrick Henry, I can see what he's talking about, because Henry's presence as an example to those young guys that you talked about, how to be a pro, how to work out, how to take care of your body after practice. Do you get an ice bath? What do? How to... all the things that he would be able to show by example, and the relationships that he could be building with some of those young guys, they all have some value. But I think when you look at Derrick Henry, a lot of it to me has to do with he's rebuilding his body in a lot of ways to get back to where it was before that foot injury. Because that, I've had that. I've had a Jones fracture, broke my foot, same place. I have a big giant screw in it. And I can tell you that you lose a whole lot of muscle mass. You lose a lot of coordination. In some cases, you have to relearn how to do football moves because you have so much atrophy in the muscle memory and everything else that just fades. Now, he came back and played in the playoffs, but he still wasn't the Derrick Henry of before that injury. Sure. And so I can see where Vrabel would want to have him there so he could have the medical staff have an eyeball on him during that reconstruction to the body that he had at the beginning of last year.
How much at Derrick Henry's age do you worry? You said you've had the same injury as Derrick. How much do you worry about Derrick's ability to get back to being Derrick Henry?
It's
usually mental more than physical, but this injury, I think, is just purely physical. And I don't think his age has much to do with it. What his age would have to do with is redeveloping his muscle mass and muscle memory and all those different things. Age would have an issue with that. But Derrick Henry has shown, at least I haven't seen, any indication that age has caught up with him yet. So, you know, I don't know that's going to be a problem. The thing is, with this injury, it's a Jones fracture, which is a break in the fifth metatarsal, in this case his right foot, which is the bone that connects the base of your little toe back towards your heel. And there's very little blood flow to that area. So it used to be that they used to cast it and let it heal naturally. And the x-ray showed that it healed, but it would still be weak because of the poor vascular feeding of oxygen, et cetera, to that place. So now what they do is they'll put in screws and even plates, and Derrick Henry has both, in order to really make sure that that bone doesn't have little tiny movements that can make that fracture not heal fully. So I think that the fracture is not going to be a problem for him. I mean, I broke mine my rookie year in 1985, right? They installed ultimately a screw that's almost as big around as a pencil and almost as long as that bone, that fifth metatarsal, and they countersunk it. This was the second screw that they put into it. They countersunk it, and it's still there. And I played basically 11 years in the NFL with that screw, and it's still there. And they say if I get run over by a truck, that'll be the last bone that'll break. So with Henry, I think it'll be about the same. In other words, the screw and the plate, unless they removed it secretly, are still there. And that's not going to be like a knee that might be a trick knee or an ankle that might be a trick ankle. He won't notice it. The only thing that he might notice is the reconstruction that we talked about, and I would tend to think that the coaching staff would like to have him there under their own medical staff during that reconstruction, because that's a bigger project than just staying in shape for the football season.
Trevor Maddich is our guest. Malik Willis showed off to the local media in the rookie minicamp a little bit of good, a little bit of bad. Great arm, good athlete. What do you make of his timetable? And would you expect him to be the backup behind Tannehill? Or do you think the Titans will plan to go with three quarterbacks and bring Willis along slowly?
Well, the safe thing is to go with three quarterbacks. But Logan Woodside's been the backup here for the last couple of years. So here's your trick question of the day. Who has more completions in the NFL since 2018? Logan Woodside or Caroline?
I was going to say Jared Stillman. Yeah, I mean, Logan Woodside has no completions. Kevin Byard has more completions than Logan Woodside.
Right, he's got one. He's got three pass attempts and one completion. There's nothing wrong with that. But so the concept that he's been here for a couple of years so he knows the offense, he's still a completely unknown quantity when it comes to playing in a regular season game.
Sure.
And so, you know, and so is Malik Willis. But one thing we know about Malik Willis is that you can play single wing and just make it a wildcat with him being the running back if that's what you have to do, right? With Logan Woodside, you hope that he'd be able to go in and do everything he needs to do. He probably can. I don't know, which means that if they want to just keep two quarterbacks, I wouldn't have a problem with them keeping Willis as the backup just because you're not displacing a proven backup anyway. And although really the safe thing would be to have Woodside there because he would be less likely to make a big mistake. And that's the first job of a backup quarterback. Not to go out and make plays, just don't mess it up any more than it has to be messed up. And Woodson is least likely to make that mess up.
Trevor Maddich is with us. Last one for you. I know coaching salaries are out of whack. It came out today. Coach K's salary last year was $12.5 million. I'm sorry. I know that Coach K is one of the greatest college coaches of all time. I know he's won a bunch of national championships, but he ain't that good. Like Duke could have found somebody else to be not as good, but definitely worth more than the money. Coach K hadn't won a title in like 7 years. I'm not pocket watching, but seriously, Trevor, $12.5 million for Coach K.
Yeah, that's an awful lot of money. I mean, Nick Saban, I think, makes about $9.5 million, right?
Sure.
Plus other, you know, stuff thrown in there.
Saban, and I love Kay. Saban is a much better a coach than Kay is.
Well, I think Saban is not just a good administrator. He's also one of the best actual physical coaches of defense in college football. So he'll get on the field and coach the defensive backs and make them better, right? The thing about it, though, is that the money you pay a coach has to do not just with how good of a coach he is. It's how much money he brings in and his program brings in. Saban, you know, the net profit of Alabama football, I think, is around $50 million a year. That's the net. If you look at if Alabama football were an NFL franchise, it's been valued in the vicinity of $1 billion. And so the most important figure in that billion-dollar corporation, essentially, making $9.5-10 million, yeah, that's reasonable.
Sure.
And the thing about Duke basketball is that this last year it was the second highest revenue of any basketball program, second only to your Louisville Cardinals, Jared. But they make about $8 million more than Kentucky does. You know, the five national championships, you know, all that stuff is that's important. But ultimately, you get paid as a percentage of the revenue that you generate, and Coach K has brought in a whole lot of money.
There you go, Trevor Maddich, as always, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. Great stuff, Trev. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Jared.
Yep, Trevor Maddich joining us on the program. Coach K, $12.5 million. Like, Coach K is a good coach.
But that's ridiculous.
12.5. If Saban's making 9 and K's making 12.5, that's not right. 615-737-1025. Mike Vrabel is mad. How mad? Why is he mad? Who's he mad at? We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, and I'm just going to tell you all right now here on the program that Nashville's own Big Machine Distillery wants to send you to the inaugural Tennessee Whiskey Trail to experience to celebrate International Tennessee Whiskey Day on May 21st at Nissan Stadium. Text WHISKEY to 615-737-1025 to enter to win a pair of tickets.